while I was there, I read a little story, maybe the first or second day or whatever, in one of the two English language newspapers saying that the city of Beijing, you know, the capital of China, was going to introduce a system in taxi cabs where when you got out of the taxi cab, you'd be able to basically press a like or dislike button in the back seat of the taxi cab, rating the driver's service. You like their thumbs up, thumbs down.
How cool is that?
It's very cool, and maybe this is the Sputnik moment of public management, that we realize that actually, you know, we always sort of think of ourselves as coming up with all these good ideas, and we don't necessarily are not the only ones necessarily coming up with them. And this, so it was, that was sort of like an aha moment for me, because I had earlier had an experience, and I now, quite frankly, can't remember whether it was the Singapore airport or the Shanghai China airport. It was like a year or two ago, but I remember the experience where going out of passport control, as you left passport control, there was again this little thumbs up, thumbs down button you could press saying, did you get good service or not? And so then, you know, as I was reading this article in the Chinese press, I was thinking about putting this into a larger context of what we ought to be doing in government. I thought back, and, you know, it started with eBay, Amazon took it on, and, of course, Facebook has now, a lot of Facebook people say, why don't they have a dislike function, but yeah, there's the like function on Facebook. And I sort of put that all together and asked myself the question, shouldn't we in government be taking advantage of this new technology as a quick and easy way to get citizen feedback on some government services, on websites, and also inside the government? I think this has a real possible usage for past performance information for vendors, you know, for government past performance ratings for vendors.
Now, let's talk a little bit about that, because on subjects like past performance, we've seen past performance, and a lot of people talk about past performance. Vendors, contractors get very nervous about past performance, and then when you make it in any way, shape, or form public, they get exceedingly nervous.
Well, I mean, the question of whether these ratings are public or not, that's a separate question. I'm not necessarily saying they should be public. That's a separate policy issue for the government. All I'm saying, let's say if you take past performance, is that on small commercial items, when somebody, you know, a government customer has bought something using a reverse auction or off of a catalog, or, you know, in some way has dealt with a vendor on a small purchase, that at the time they complete the transaction, they give a thumbs up or a thumbs down, and that since there'll be a lot of these transactions, can be transformed into an average past performance rating for that vendor. Whether you make it public or not is a separate issue, and I mean that. You could have that either public or private. Traditionally, this government past performance information has been private. I'm not taking a position on that. All I'm saying is here is an easy way to gather it.
It seems to me to have encumbered past performance assessment is it becomes, frankly, such a bureaucratic process. There's this big, long form, and so people don't end up really doing it in an effectual way. Maybe just thumbs up or thumbs down might be the way to actually do it. And then if you need more detail, you can go back and get more.
Chris, that's exactly the idea behind this. It lets give customers, I don't want a thumbs up and thumbs down on how is Lockheed doing on the Joint Strike Fighter.
Right.
I'm talking about everyday commercial items you get from a vendor.
Yeah.
You know, we have reverse auctions that we're doing, you know, we're doing a lot of buying through that. We have catalogs, you know, electronic catalogs and so forth. Just give the customers a chance to quickly rate their experience with the vendor. And the idea, as you're absolutely right, one of the disincentives to get past performance information is the complex bureaucratic forms. And this is a way around that, and having the part of the Federal Acquisition Regulation that talks about past performance for simplified acquisitions like this one specifically says, and I know it said it because it was done while I was in the government and I was behind it saying it, specifically says you can use simplified systems, including customer satisfaction surveys, as a measure of past performance for these simplified contracts. You don't need a complicated bureaucratic form.
And it also seems like there is a potential to use this. I remember years ago when I was covering the Navy Marine Corps intranet, this enormous system that they were rolling out, EDS essentially owning the network. There were a lot of unhappy people using, again, a kind of simple process with frontline users, people actually using it. All of a sudden you can get, you know, people sometimes say criticism is hard, but it also gives you real insight about what's working and what's not working.
Exactly. And one way you could do this, or no, let me rephrase that, another way you could do this is that you have a lot of, contract officers, technical representatives, program managers sending in vouchers for approval all the time. Why? And those go in, I think generally they go in electronically. And there are a lot of those vouchers. What about just adding on at the end of the voucher, as you sort of sign it to approve it, to either yes or no or 1 to 5 scale, how's the vendor been doing the last week? The last week. And just, and you could get, there are a lot of vouchers that are being processed. Get some trend data. It would actually be, I mean, if I were a contractor, I'd want this as an early warning signal of my numbers going up, are they going down? But the key thing, as you said, Chris, is you got to make it simpler. People won't do it.
Yeah. Well, I was watching this program with, and I don't remember who it was now, but they said, you know, the Dalai Lama was telling, it was Diane Sawyer, and the Dalai Lama was telling her that, criticism can be hard to take, but if you think about it as it's just a request made in a rather crude way, all of a sudden it becomes a lot easier to take that, and you go, hold on, this can be really helpful in allowing me to be successful.
Right. And by the way, I mean, it's not just criticism. I mean, there is I got great service. I mean, I hope we'll be seeing lots of that as well. So people should have an easy way to give kudos as well as criticism.
I'm sorry, I interrupted you earlier and you had another point to
make. No. I was going to make the point about vouchers.
Yeah.
When government officials are approving payment vouchers, which there are a lot of those approved, add on this simple thing. 1 to 5 scale, like, dislike, how's the vendor been doing this last week? And aggregate that information and use it for sort of an ongoing trend analysis for how the vendor's doing.
I can't let you get away without at least getting your insights, and I know you did another post talking about your impressions of China. I think we have this sort of mythical view of China a little bit, and so what were your impressions?
China is a fascinating place, and not surprisingly, given that it is a country of 1.2 billion or whatever people, there's no such thing as China. I mean, there are, you know, you talk to people, certainly the people who speak English, and I'm sort of trying to speak Chinese, but I certainly can't have a complicated conversation in Chinese. People, I mean, you know, there's a range of opinion, and there are you really run into a lot of people who, you know, I mean, the U.S. still has a lot of soft power, to use my colleague Joe Nye's phrase. I mean, there are a lot of people who admire our democracy, maybe sometimes even more than we do, looking at some of the gridlock in Washington, who admire our freedoms, who admire our culture. They're also, though, very proud of what they've accomplished. A lot of them are very nationalistic. The country is like a bundle of contradictions. Surprise, it's a country of 1.2 billion people. There's some features of sort of communism, whatever you want to call it, sort of on the surface that in some sense no one takes seriously, and it's a very market-oriented economy in a lot of ways, but the state sector is still... I almost want to say the more time I spend there, I don't want to say the more confused I become, but the more
complex
the picture seems. It's interesting, just take one little factoid that's sort of surprising to me. College students, the students at the best universities, the top-ranked jobs, interestingly enough, are to work, for better or worse, and I'm not sure it is for better particularly, but are to work either for the government or for a state-owned enterprise. Mm. Because people think you have a very easy life if you do that, and you're a pretty good salary, you know, whatever. And like, I think for their entrance exam for the civil service, don't quote me on these numbers, but there's something like you know, 1.5 million kids take it for 30,000 places or some, again, those, that's sort of ballpark, ROM, as they say in the DOD, rough order of magnitude. I'm not sure those numbers are exactly right. It seems like most college students, at least the ones I met, would rather work for the government or state-owned enterprise than either for a Chinese private company, of which there are a lot, including a lot of the internet companies, or for a foreign company. Actually, you know what the most popular foreign company to work for is? Comes to number one, Procter & Gamble.
Really?
I think Google is two. But the cosmetics industry is very big in China. L'Oreal, they also have Chinese names for all these things. So L'Oreal Cosmetics in China is called Olea. and you know, in Kentucky Fried Chicken, which actually beats out McDonald's in China, is called Kanduji. And G is the word for chicken, so they actually get these sort of these things that sound like the word, or actually Starbucks is another funny one. That's Shinbaku. And Shin is star. Huh. It sounds like star, like Shinbaku.
When I saw that you also wrote that we hear a lot about the pollution, and that's very visible.
Ugh. I mean, the days I was in Beijing, it was really disgusting. Just as I was leaving for the airport, I had this guy was driving me stop in front of the CCTV, the Chinese television new skyscraper, which is that building that sort of has this weird, you know, you've seen pictures of it. It's by some Swiss architect. It has these two columns and then this horizontal thing in between them. It's a very unusual structure. So I want to take a look at it. I would say I was 50 feet away from it, and I could sort of see the outlines of it in the middle of the day. And there was, it was a quote unquote sunny day. I mean, it was not cloudy. There was a sort of this thing that was the sun up in the sky, but below it and around it was gray and gunk and disgusting.
Well, and I was doing this cruise through the Panama Canal, and we were just shocked when we came through the canal and saw Panama City, where there are cranes everywhere, just buildings going up seemingly as fast as they can build them. And my sense is, from talking to folks who have been to China, that's happening all the time in China.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Actually, you know, I visited Panama while I was in the government to work a little bit on the transition when the Panamanians took over the canal.
Yeah.
And on these tall buildings, I don't know if you had it, if you were inside any of them or noticed it or whatever, but they have this, at least at that time, this amazing feature. Talk about a hierarchical class society where you had these high rises that some fairly wealthy people lived in, and they had a nanny room or a servant room in the apartment, and the rest of the apartment was air conditioned, and the nanny room had no air conditioning. At least that was what it was like when I was there in 96.
Yeah.
But yes, you're right. There are cranes everywhere and a lot of modern stuff coming up. The area where they called for these protests, you know, where there's a McDonald's, you know, in Beijing, is an area that used to be the fanciest shopping area in the city. It's fairly near Tiananmen Square and the Forbidden City, but it's now, it's sort of like two generations old, because you now have newer generations of glitzier, fancier, more outrageous Louis Vuitton, Hermes malls that have come up that have sort of made this one a little bit sort of outdated.
Very nice. I'm going to stop right there. Thank you.